Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And obviously, a lot of people talking about that horrific, horrific crimes committed by Raymond Shorten from Clondalkin in Dublin. He was a taxi driver, and two horrendous, horrific crimes. He faced justice today. He's been given 17 years in jail for the rape of two young passengers on separate occasions in August 2022. And as you will be aware, on Monday, he got a 13-year sentence for raping a young girl, 7 years of age, in 2012. But the unusual thing and appropriate thing, I think a lot of people say, just as Paul McDermott said, that it is unusual to give consecutive sentences. But the extending, in other words, he's a 13-year sentence and a 17-year sentence. Most people on most occasions presume that the 17 years being the longer is what he will do. But on this occasion, just as Paul McDermott said, he wants and he's decided that Shorten should serve first of all the 13 years that he was handed down on Monday for the rape of the 7-year-old on two occasions, and he should then begin his sentence. After 13 years, he should then begin a sentence of 17 years for the rape and attack on those two young women who were passengers in his taxi. And Justice McDermott spoke of the great betrayal by Shorten, because on the one hand, we hear stories of great kindness shown by taxi drivers, and they are trusted members of our community. We do, when we see the sign, we presume that we're getting in to a place of safety to be brought home. And of course, this turned into a nightmare, to say the least, for these two young women. And they have spoken before of their anxiety, their trust issues, the long-term effect, the nightmarish effect, every parent's worst nightmare. Because as you may remember, one of the young women immediately was met at her home by her parents and told them what had happened. And by the way, Shorten, right up to the bitter end, said he pleaded not guilty to the three offences. And just, I know taxi drivers are working at the minute, so most of them are just texting us at the minute. It's very important, obviously. It's very difficult to talk when you have a passenger in the car, you understand that. But on 0818715815, one taxi driver has already said to us, "I've been in the taxi industry for 18 years, and in general, I have to say, in terms of this industry, we are the poor relation of the transport sector. The system turns a blind eye to what goes on in this industry. There are rules and regulations to beat the band, but no enforcement. What is not being enforced? Who was validated for it? He believes he was being validated for taxis. He said the interest and the main preoccupation at the minute is encouraging taxi drivers to get wheelchair accessible taxis, which is laudable, as we know. But they're the only new licenses that are being given out. But he says the taxi industry is the poor relation of the transport sector. And even though they pay their fees every year, and they pay their taxes, obviously, and their excise on petrol and diesel, they don't get the service, he believes, in terms of enforcement that they deserve from the state. I'm sure we'll be talking about that later on in the programme as well, because I have, and you have, even over the last few days, heard good stories about taxi drivers. I heard of a taxi driver, mobile phone left behind, and couldn't find the passenger, rang the last person who was phoned, and that person happened to be in a hospital, which was a distance from where the taxi driver was then sitting, and the taxi driver dropped the phone up to the hospital. Another random act of kindness that they don't get enough thanks for, and I know bus drivers often do the same as well. Okay, now, unfortunately, and I know a number of people will be unhappy to hear this, but Bishop Eamon Casey And the church have accepted it and they paid compensation. But before he died, he never faced court like Raymond Shorten did. The DPP decided on one occasion that the case should not go forward. But he was accused and has been accused of raping a five-year-old member of his family. Now, and that is deeply, deeply upsetting, especially for the victim and the victims. Now, Mary Kavanagh is in Mycullen in County Galway. Mary, you started your own protest about Bishop Eamon Casey. What does that involve?
Hi, Joe. I'd much prefer if this was Funny Friday, but however, what it involved was the programme upset me so much, Joe, that I just couldn't think what to do, or, you know. The mere fact that he's buried in the crypt there, and in the victim's statement, his niece said that she was abused in Inch, in the bishop's palace, and the cathedral, among other places.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get past that. I thought, who heard that little girl cry? You know, from the time she was five to the time she was, I guess, a teenager.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from, Joe.
What did your protest consist of?
The protest consisted of standing outside the cathedral with a homemade placard, which I did it on Monday evening, but I just had a brown box and it wasn't great, and a tin marker. I thought, this is not good. So I went back yesterday and it was a little better, but started to rapidly disintegrate in the weather we had here in the west yesterday.
The rain, yeah.
Yeah.
And your placard says, Bishop Casey...
Yes.
Raped a five-year-old child. He later violated her in this church, this cathedral, under the eyes of his God.
Yes.
He should not be interred here. He is a monster. What reaction?
I know it's just been past tense, but I feel his legacy has lived on.
And what did you get any reaction?
Interestingly enough, yes and no.
Okay.
Galway, I don't know if you know this time of the year in Galway, Joe, it's absolutely thronged, you know. And between two bridges, there's a kind of a crossway, crossing, pedestrian crossing, with lights to the cathedral. And I stood on the evening before, I forget what day it is now, the evening before, I stood there at just opposite, you know, the crossing outside the walls of the cathedral.
Right.
And I spoke to a lot of tourists, and I just thought, this is sapping all my energy, because it meant explaining. If anyone stopped to ask, it took a long time. So anyway, I knew my placard wasn't great. So the next day, I actually stood the other side of the main gate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit better because it was close to a bus stop. And the buses are just bus air and buses, and they're going all over the city.
Yeah.
So they're... You know, there are people looking out and all of that. Some people stopped. I got a few beeps and a few thumbs up. And so I guess, like, I went home because I was frozen and wet.
Now, I also, people will be aware, Galway Cathedral has not been without its controversy. It was built, it was opened nearly 60 years ago in August 1965. It was built between 1958 and 1965. It was the first public stone building built in Ireland in over a century. It was paid for by the people of Galway. One listener said to me, "I'm from Galway. There was a professional money collecting firm."
Yes.
Brought in by Bishop Michael Brown to collect money from every household to build the cathedral. You heard that, okay. There was huge pressure was put on families to pay, and the cathedral was fully paid for before it was even opened. And it was built on the site of a former jail on Nuns Island. Now, older listeners may remember that in 1966, on the Late Late Show, where else did you... A young man called Brian Travascus, he was talking about inequality and life in Ireland. And Bishop Michael Brown was the bishop that initiated and campaigned for this cathedral, though it had been going on for decades, of collecting of money. But he said, Brian Trevasca said, Galway Cathedral was a monstrosity, an architectural monstrosity. The money that went into it should be given to the poor. And that Bishop Brown then complained and demanded an apology from the Late Late Show and RTE, which he got. The following Friday, Brian Trevascus, I think he's now deceased, Brian Trevascus had to come back on the Late Late and apologise, not just apologise for calling the building a monstrosity, which we're all entitled to do, good, bad, but for calling the bishop a moron for not putting the money into the poor. Now, five years ago, in the Irish Times, they had a competition for Ireland's ugliest building. This is just, I'm just trying to find out who paid for this marble mahogany crypt where Bishop Casey lived.
Here by the minute, Joe.
Okay. Galway Cathedral, this is how it was described by a contributor to the Irish Times. Galway Cathedral, that squatting Frankenstein's monster of architectural languages, casting a miserable shadow over an ocean of tarmac. A Disneyland imitation of the great European ecclesiastical tradition, a monument to the hubris of its soft-handed sponsors. Now, I'd love to know, it's a long time, 60 years ago and longer, who paid for that cathedral. We have put it to the Archdiocese of Dublin, Archdiocese of Galway, more than a day ago. How do they react to these people calling for his remains to be removed, especially in light of how people, for example, stillborn babies and people who died by suicide were not even allowed a funeral mass or a consecrated burial spot. And as of yet, unfortunately, we've had no reply.
My own mother was having a baby in marriage.
She was churched afterwards, yeah.
That's beside the point.
Yeah. And Mary, are you going to continue your campaign?
No, Joe, that programme just, you know, it exposed the rotten heart of the Catholic Church for me because there's been too much of it. And, you know, it's actually, I felt so sick when I thought that he's buried in the crypt there. And the funeral he had, I don't know what you call it. I don't know, a requiem or a high requiem or
The obsequies were of a high ecclesiastical.
There must have been 100 bishops.
Exhibition, yeah. Well, there was 11 bishops and 60 priests.
He was a man like who he thrived in adulation. He actually needed it, you know. And like he was always out there. He was a man who was, you know, full of bonhomie and everything, you know. And people loved him. They loved him. And, you know,
they loved the Bishop Eamon Casey. They knew.
They knew, Joe, exactly.
And many occasions from a distance. Through the Late Late or through other programmes or through his work.
People of Galway were very intimate with Bishop Casey. Now, I'm in Galway since 1976, I think.
Okay.
And I'm here a long time. And, like, he drove quite a lot of days during the week past the school that I was pushing my five-year-old. And everybody, oh, there's Casey, you know, like, he'd look out, you know, with kind of the wave and his big car, like, I think it was a black Merc. I'm not holding that against the man, like, and I'm not looking for any kind of a contradiction or I don't mind one. But just thought, like, this man, he lived this life and he was buried. I was one of the first people who, you know, said, oh, you know, at least, you know, when Annie Murphy's story came out, at least it wasn't children, you know?
Yeah.
It was a grown woman, although a very vulnerable woman, but a grown woman, previously married. So presumably she knew.
Well, she was 24, he was 46. She was vulnerable. She was coming. She was sent to her uncle in Ireland to recuperate from trauma. Okay, stay there, Mary. David Borden, your point, please. David.
Yeah, hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, no, I just want to say that I think he should be taken out of that crypt, you know, because this thing, like, I mean, if he's not taken out, well, this is glorifying the church, like, it's not glorifying Jesus, you know.
Okay, this is, what would he be, what do they call it, a prince of the church, isn't that it?
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Jesus said there's unless a man deny himself and follow me, you know? That's not denying yourself, you know, you're being put in it. You know, I think as you said yesterday, Joe, that you have people there and they're being denied burial and babies, born babies and everything, being denied burial, you know, by the church.
And what about forgiveness, David?
Forgiveness, yeah. Well, I was talking to a woman, Joe, there the other day on the street, and she said, "Oh, well, we can't judge." Oh no, I said, "I'm not judging him. You know, I'm just saying this thing is wrong because it's glorifying the church. And where is the words of Jesus? I mean, Jesus said in John, if you ever read in John chapter 3, he says, unless a man is born again, he shall never see the kingdom of heaven, you know?
And I know Bishop Casey died without ever admitting the offences, and I know he died without ever being tried or convicted. But the difference is that his church in Galway, the Diocese of Galway, through his bishop, and his church in Limerick, again through the bishop, both of them, and by the way, the Vatican as well, the triumvirate there, they have accepted the veracity of the people who have alleged that Bishop Eamon Casey abused them, and they say they have absolutely no doubt of their veracity. So they believe that Bishop Eamon Casey did wrong, to say the least. Now I'm going to bring in Geraldine Bradley. Geraldine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And again, one of these stories on what happens in public to Bishop Eamon Casey and what happens in private to people like yourself. What happened, Geraldine?
Well, I'm a mother of a little baby that was born. It was stillborn.
Okay.
And there was no reason, the hospital couldn't give me a reason as to why the baby might have died. But my little baby was buried in Glasnevin. Laura is her name, a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I don't know when the baby was buried or anything about the burial. Mm-hmm. If it had a sermon at the grave, if there was a prayer said over it or not.
Okay.
I was only 22 at the time, and very young, and I was married. It wasn't born out of wedlock. We were married, myself and John, over a year and a half, when Laura was born, and I didn't even get to name my baby. My baby was named by the hospital, I presume, because there was a little nurse left with me, I'd say a little trainee nurse left with me when I had my baby, because the nurse that had been looking after me went for her lunch. And my little baby was born, Laura. And I suppose part of it was my own fault, because I said I didn't want to see the baby. I was very, very upset. And the baby was taken from me. But then a nurse came to the door of the ward that I was in on my own. And she said something to me. Do you want the baby something? I don't know what word she used, but to me it meant baptized.
Okay.
And I said yes. Now, I was crying. I was on my own. My husband wasn't with me. They hadn't even informed my husband that morning to say I was going into labour. But she went and she came back and she said, we called her Laura. Is that okay? And that was the end of that.
And no idea, was Laura any part of your name or the information you
went?
No.
Laura's not in our family at all. So it wasn't, no. In actual fact, we had picked Amanda as the name for that baby. And I now have a daughter, Amanda, because Laura was given to my first baby. And she was buried in Glasnevin. I mean, we live in County Carlow.
Right.
We weren't given an option as to where we want the baby was going to be buried. When my husband came up to see me later on, John, he wasn't asked if he wanted to see the baby or anything about the baby, or if we wanted to bring home the baby and bury it or anything.
And you also received a communication from Glasnevin Cemetery subsequently.
Yes, a year later, we received a letter to pay, I think, £17 at the time for the upkeep of the grave, which we paid. And at that stage, I said to my husband, John, that I wanted to go up and see where the baby was buried. And he brought me, and we paid the €17, or £17. And there wasn't even a marking on the grave. Now, I assumed that this was actually for burying the baby rather than the upkeep of the grave, because there was nothing to upkeep. There was nothing there. There was no headstone. There was no marking.
Okay.
Like, there was just grass. And I remember that day he literally carried me out of the graveyard, and he said to me, I am never bringing you back. And I never went back for 12 years later when I had to go for counselling.
Right.
And, yeah.
The long-lasting trauma.
Yeah, it was 12 years. And I, after, during the counselling, part of the counselling was maybe to write a letter to the baby, to Laura, which I did. And another part of it was maybe that if we maybe had a little service ourselves up at the graveyard, which we also did, because we had there was a very nice priest here in the community at the time, and he's still alive, he's retired, and we got in touch with him. He was a really nice man, a friend of family, and we asked him to know would he come with us and do a little service or something up at the graveyard.
Yeah.
Which he did. He came up, and there was myself and my husband John, and our two children, John Junior and Amanda.
Yeah. And when you did you watch the program on Monday?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And I feel so sorry for his niece, and I feel so sorry for his family, because he has extended family. And I mean, it's not their fault, and it has nothing, like, what he did has it's nothing got to do with them. But yeah, I think the burial that he got, and the burial that my little baby got, Laura, through, like, no fault of ours, we were married,
of course.
All we wanted was this baby, and it died through nobody's fault either. And to think that, you know, I wasn't even there. My husband wasn't there. We were never asked where we wanted this baby buried.
Yeah.
Now, we did consider taking the baby back to Carlow. When I did the counselling, and when I went up and visited, we were going to uproot her little grave, her little coffin. And if she's in the little coffin, I don't even know what she's in, and bring her back to Carlow. But then... as far as I can remember, we were told that there was 15 babies buried in this little plot. There was 3 wide and 5 deep, and she would have been kind of in the middle of one of those plots. And that I didn't want to uproot other babies
of course.
As well, you know. That. So we just kind of left her to rest there then.
And then the issue that's been raised about the remains of Bishop Casey resting in the crypt in Galway Cathedral. Exalted. Okay. Thanks indeed, Geraldine, and kind regards to you, and God rest your first Amanda, and
Laura.
God good health.
Laura.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Which name did you? I know you wanted to call her Amanda.
No, we have a daughter called Amanda now.
I know that. And John.
She was called Laura.
Okay, you accept that. Okay.
And we have a son, Ian, also.
Okay. And Geraldine, kind regards, and thank you so much for telling us that. Paul Affinity, Paul at Joe at RT.ie 51551. Your quick reaction, please, Paula, to the Eamon Casey scandal.
Yeah, hi, Joe. I'll tell you, I was brought up a Catholic, baptised, made my communion, made my confirmation, got married in the Catholic Church. I have children myself, and I'm raising them as Catholics. And after watching that documentary the other night, I'm done. I'm finished. I am completely finished with the Catholic Church as an institution. I feel that I'm actually kind of disappointed in myself that it has taken me this long to make this decision. They are red rotten to the core. Now, this is no reflection on my relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ and his mother.
The iteration that the vast majority of clerics and people who work and volunteer in churches are decent people. But anyway, I take your own situation is your own situation, and you're totally entitled to it. I don't want to dilute
that's
my
opinion, Paula. Joe.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's just my opinion, and it makes me laugh because, you know, Christy Moore once sang a song with the lyrics, "Two jockey boys, they'd ride for Ireland while teaching us morality." And it shocks me that more people haven't taken this view. That I see people there going into mass on Sunday, they're walking in like sheep. It's nothing short of a cult, in my opinion. And I really feel that we say Ireland has moved on. It hasn't, you know. It hasn't. They still, a lot of the Irish people are still under the cosh of the Catholic Church. And more fool them. But I'm done. I'm absolutely done.
And will you write to your bishop saying, sorry, I don't mean even, shouldn't have used that phrase. Will you write to their bishop saying, I'm out?
Well, I'll tell you this. I remember a couple of years ago when and it's still the same with the housing crisis in Ireland. And I sat down and I put pen to paper and I wrote to the bishop, the primate of all Ireland, actually. And I sent him a letter saying that there was a parochial house in my village, which I won't mention right now, but there was a parochial house that was empty in my village. Right. And that there were so many families, it was coming up to Christmas. And I said, you know, would you consider, I'm sure there are several other parochial houses around the country that are empty. Would you consider freeing them up, taking families out of B&Bs and hotels and let them into a home environment, even on a short-term basis? And I received a letter back from him, and I can back all of this up. I can send it to your show.
Okay, don't worry. I believe you.
Yeah, I got a letter back saying, currently, there is one unused parochial house in the Republic of Ireland.
Really?
Now, isn't that funny? And that same house must have been in my village, because that is the one. So my husband works and drives for a living, and the two of us are constantly looking out for parochial houses that are not being used. So they stand up in the pulpit and they talk about love thy neighbour while giving us plenty of money there. Make sure you give us plenty of money in the box. But when it comes down to them giving back to their people, to their sheep, they walk, they talk the talk, but they certainly don't walk the walk, Joe. And I'm done.
Okay. All right, thanks indeed. That's Paul Affinity. Alice Bourke is in Galway. That point earlier about who paid for Galway Cathedral, the cost of countless millions in today's money. Alice Bourke, your point, please.
Yes, I'm Joe. My point is that I think Bishop Casey's remains should be torfed out of the cathedral. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there shouldn't be any question about it. He wasn't, you know, what he has done is unspeakable.
Okay. You're from Galway?
No, I'm not originally from Galway.
Sorry.
I live here for over 55 years.
Well, it was built between 58 and 65. There'd been a campaign for many, many decades calling for a cathedral in Galway. It was controversial. And at the time, as I say, in the Late Late Show, it was called a monstrosity. And this young man, Brian Trevascus, who suffered for his public attack on the church, Brian Trevascus said it was a monstrosity, give the money to the poor, and that the Bishop, Michael Brown, in his belief, because of his putting his money into this, being moronic. But anyway,
Joe, I remember my mother-in-law telling, they had a small shop in Newcastle at the time, and they said, and they were all told, they got letters out, there was no question about you not contributing, it was, you had to pay it, and that was just it.
And it was for the cathedral?
Yes, it was for the cathedral,
yes.
She emphasised that because I heard her speaking.
Because I remember, Alice, now maybe, I'm presuming maybe you can help me, I remember we were talking about a church in Limerick a few years ago on Liveline, and I was surprised to hear when they were fundraising to build the church, the local diocese asked people to donate jewellery and diamonds. Diamonds would be used for some of the ecclesiastical instruments, so to speak, in the church. And if they got silver and gold, it would be melted down to help build the church, help pay for the church. But anyway, I presume that didn't happen in Galway. But you say there was a pretty intensive campaign for the people of Galway to build this cathedral, which was built.
Yeah, I think Bishop Brown had the iron fist on it, you know,
he was a very strong bishop at the time, himself and John Charles McQuaid in different sides of the country, him covering the west and McQuaid covering the east. Between them, they embraced the country in a very tight and controlling embrace. But also on the day,
even up to this day now, they tell you that it costs £1,000 a week for the heating of the cathedral at the moment.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and by the way, did you ever meet Eamon Casey or your family?
I met him on two occasions.
Okay.
I met him once when we were living in Rathoon Flats, was similar like to Ballymun.
Yeah.
And I went to see him because we were having a lot of difficulties within the flats, you know, and to see could he do anything about it. I met him in his office in the cathedral.
Okay.
And he just got in and he sat down and pounded the thing and he said, "My good girl," he said, "get used to it. There'll be more of them put up here."
Okay.
You know, that was his attitude. Then I met him and my son made his confirmation. And there was some friends of ours and people were in the church taking photographs. And he got up and he said, "Stop," he said, "this is the house of God. I don't want any flash cameras or anything in here." Okay. You know?
Yeah. Well, did you get a photograph?
I got one of them. I threw it in the fire this morning. I had one of my son that someone had given me that taken it, and I threw it in the fire.
You threw the photograph in the fire?
I did. I threw it in the fire.
Of Bishop Eamon Casey.
Yeah. I just think, I didn't mind any of his other, because I always thought he was a fast flyer. Like, you'd meet him on the road, like, doing nearly 200 mile an hour in the car. Okay. And he was just a fast liver, and he had these special fish from Galway sent up to the palace. And Taylor said it was just an ordinary house, but it's a palace. He lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived a very high life. He drank, he ate of the best, and he had a good life, you know. And then he had this other life that I think is, when that came on the programme the other night, I was absolutely, that really hit me on my... Whatever else he did in his life, I overlooked. You know, it's not his own business, really, but I didn't think much about it. But when I think of children that weren't allowed to be buried in places, and this man has got, even at the end of his days, he got buried in the crib.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's fit to be down there. I go in there occasionally to Mass.
Well, apparently the five, his four predecessors are buried there. Including Michael Brown. You have to be a bishop to, obviously deceased.
Yeah, I think all this has been known a good bit. We don't actually, probably if we looked when he'd been in Trokra and all these places he was out, there's nothing how many people, like he did go over to do some work, but he was doing more than working to the working areas in London, like Cricklewood and Kilburn and these places, you know.
Okay, Alice, good to meet you, Margaret.
I just call Joe that the people will really put a strong thing and get him turfed out. That's all I want.
Okay, that's Alice Burke in Galway. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Let's go to Paris, and it's on everywhere, and all we hear about is the unprecedented security. At every Olympics from now on, it will be unprecedented security. But it will be a magnificent event, especially in the City of Light in Paris. Liz Lewis, Liz, you were there, but what happened?
Hi, we're in Paris at the moment. But basically we arrived, I'm staying in my sister's house, so they're gone away on holidays and we're looking after their dogs, so we've got a 3-week holiday looking out on the Eiffel Tower. It's wonderful here.
Mm-hmm.
But we were basically scammed by a taxi driver, and it was a scam I hadn't heard of.
Okay.
Since we've come back, I've Googled it and I've realised it's quite widespread. So I was just thinking of the athletes, friends and families and different people coming over. So like we're grand because we're here for 3 weeks, free accommodation, and we can have a few tins of baked beans on toast instead of gourmet meals to make up the money. But if you were just here for four days, it would actually ruin your holiday. So
okay, so the scam, let's warn people.
Well, the scam is, first of all, in Paris, just because something has taxi written on the side, has a meter and has a light on the top, doesn't mean it's a registered taxi. So that was the first shocker for me.
Okay.
So basically we came out of a museum and I had a knee replacement in May, so I was quite tired after the museum, and we saw a car parked outside parked outside a restaurant with its light on.
Yeah.
I was going, happy days, because, you know, like in Dublin, it's so hard to get a taxi or whatever. Lovely taxi driver. He said he'd bring us to where we wanted to go, whatever, put the meter on. And we were saying, oh, do you take cards? And he said, oh, yeah, take cards. And we were delighted with ourselves. And then basically it was the first day, because with the security, they blocked off the around the river. That was the first day that they blocked it off. So we were driving down the quays or along the river, and he was saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to get you across the river. And I was thinking to myself, oh, well, I know these four bridges are shut, but if he brings us all around the houses, we would get to the he would be able to bring us to where we were. And I was thinking, oh, that's a bit strange that he doesn't want to get a big fare from us, but we've got no grand, just drop us here by the metro, that was fine. And then so the fare was a tenner, and my husband was saying, here, 13 euro, whatever.
Okay.
13 euro came up on the screen. So my husband tapped his card and he went, oh, the tap hasn't worked.
Okay.
So then he put the card into a card reader, it didn't have the LED display, it just had the digits. So my husband just put in his PIN number, and the cab driver's going, oh, do you want a receipt? We're going, no, we don't need a receipt. Have a great day and all the rest of it. We toddled off on our way, got the metro home and all the rest of it. And then that evening I was checking my receipt, and I won't say the name of the company, but it came up with a name that sounded kind of like a high-end name or whatever, and it was 400 euro. I was going, hang on a minute now, and I was thinking, God, we're going away in September, maybe I was thinking, oh, maybe it's a hotel in the future, or maybe it's whatever. But when we checked it out, we were going, well, that cab fare hasn't come true. So we rang, we're with Permanent TSB, and we rang them up immediately. And unfortunately, we paid with our Visa debit. So they were saying, well, that's not really a scam, because you put in your PIN number and we can see you only tried it once and it was successful. And so you can try ringing customer services for a chargeback on Monday. And they didn't kind of, it wasn't like a red, they weren't saying, oh, this isn't as it should be kind of thing. So that was fine.
So he whipped 400 quid.
Yes. And like we were charged 400, but I've read two cases of people in the UK who was like 750. And
so how
another
do,
one was
so what do I do if I'm lucky enough to be in Paris? And I know you made sacrifices to get there, but what do I do? Well, a lot of people go even over the next year. What do I do to avoid this scam?
Yeah, well, I'm an expert in it now.
Okay.
Basically, what you do is only use an official rank is the first thing if you're going to be. So they were saying, like, say, for example, in the Garde du Nord, if you come out the front of the station, there's the official rank.
Mm-hmm.
If you come out the side of the station, it's just people kind of chancing their arm, parking their taxi there. So that's the first thing. And the other one is to either use Uber, or there's a very good, it's called G7, which is like, it would be like Free Now or something in Dublin. So that would be a reputable, so just basically pre-order your taxi. And then the other thing is, someone said that if we'd paid by our credit card rather than our debit card, there would have been more comeback. And then obviously you could pay with cash. But then I've heard two stories. One, that they just say, no, we don't take cash. And the second one is that you hand them, say, a 50, and they kind of do a fumble and say, oh, no, you gave me a 10. Or, you know, so they're actually getting more money from you that way. So, I mean, my main advice would be just don't hail a cab. Get one from a rank or get one through an app.
Or get a metro if you can.
The metro is great. You know,
yeah, is
a lot of the metro stations are closed until after the opening ceremony. But then after that, they'll all be open again. So
and I know you tried to get tickets for London and you didn't. And there's a bit of a lottery for Paris. And as a random, what did you get tickets for?
We're going to, my daughter and her friend went to the football yesterday.
Okay.
And even though the football, people were saying, oh, it's kind of like, the outskirts of the Olympics or whatever, or the outskirts of football. But she sent me some video, and the atmosphere and everything was just brilliant. Like, so really good.
The rugby sevens, then, yeah, I presume, is it?
Was, and there was football as well, like it's under 23s or something. And then we got tickets for beach volleyball, table tennis, and then we have tickets for the boxing on Monday as well. So we're really lucky.
Oh, you're doing well. And what's the atmosphere like, Liz?
I think everyone got. I don't think anyone was expecting the impact of the security closures from before, because the area I'm at, it's very close to the Trocadero and it's close to the river. And like, we were here at the same time last year, and we brought a friend out for dinner on Saturday night, and the restaurant was completely empty, whereas it had been thronged the year before. So I think there's a lot of people losing business this week. But when everything opens, and all the prices and everything were the same as last year, you know, you weren't being ripped off or anything. But the atmosphere, like, we were over here, we were over in time for the Bastille Day fireworks or whatever. You know, like, they really had gone
Liz, you've ignited. Stay there, 0818715815. Rita.
Hi, Joe.
You've heard about this scam.
Well, I tell you, I was in Paris last weekend, myself, my daughter and a friend. And the first we noticed of anything was we were coming through the airport with the bags, now going to the exit. And there was a lady there, and she was saying, you know, she had an official on, and she was saying 65 euro. And I said, to my daughter, I said, that sounds very small, because like, I've been to Paris a couple of times, and the last time I remember was about 15 years ago, and I paid 75 euro then to get from Paris to Charles de Gaulle. So I thought the opposite. I thought she was the scam. So I spoke to her and I said, there's three of us. We're heading over the Seine. We're actually heading over to the left bank. So that's a bit further. Right. We have bags with us. How is it 65? And she said, no, that's what it is. But she says, there are other taxi drivers that they will charge you anything. So she officially brought us right the way out to the front gate, the front door, and we met an official there, and he called over the taxis. And so we didn't have the problem. But coming back, I was talking to somebody at the airport, coming back to Dublin, and they had been charged 172 euro. From and they were the other side of the river, so it should have even been cheaper, from when they arrived in Paris, from Charles de Gaulle to Paris. Okay. And as I said, they weren't even brought as far as their hotel. So they had a very bad impression of Paris. So I checked around with a few people. And when we called any taxi from, like, when we were coming back to the airport, we called a taxi from the hotel. So the only difference was there was the 4 euro charge, you know, which was fine.
Yeah, okay.
Anytime we did use taxis, we paid cash or we used Uber. So we were very lucky. But, like, there's an awful difference between paying 65 and 172 for the same distance. In fact, a shorter distance. So you're right to have brought this, or whoever did bring it up, because there's a lot of people travelling, obviously, to Paris at the moment that wouldn't know about it.
Okay. And have you been to Paris often, Rita?
Well, in my lifetime, I've probably been there about 14 or 15 times, but I haven't been there for a while.
Okay.
But it was absolutely fabulous. But like that lady said, some of the bridges were closed, so the huge amount of security, which was very good, but, you know, inconvenient in some ways.
Okay.
But it was really, really lovely. It's a great atmosphere. There always is, but particularly with the Olympics now and that. So I hope anybody that's going has a great time.
We didn't
go for the Olympics. We just went for a lovely weekend,
You don't need an excuse to go to Paris.
No, you don't. Okay.
Slán, Rita and Liz Lewis. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
There's one to talk about the fallout from this programme about Eamon Casey and the revelations. Gerard Kavanagh. Gerard, your point, please.
How are you, Joe? Yes,
no,
I just think, you know, ironically, my point would be that he should be left where he is.
Okay.
He fits right in. Okay. That might sound a bit odd, but basically, there's a suggestion somehow that he's adulterating the sanctity and purity of the church. In fact, he just underlines the rank hypocrisy of the Catholic Church. Leave him there, because that fits right in there, if you ask me. You should just leave him there, you know. Let him be a reminder of the hypocrisy of the church.
Yeah, but you're not
goes on to this day.
Are you not using the phrase tarring with the one brush and, you know, tarring everybody?
Well, the trouble is that there are certainly lots of... Back in the 1990s, when I packed it in, basically, the Catholic Church, if you like, you know, I'm a remnant of parents that grew up, you know, were born pre-World War II, basically. So I was brought up in a very strongly Catholic family, okay? So it took me a long time to unravel the ingrained taboos that I grew up within,
okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But in the 1990s, with all the child abuse stuff, that did it for me finally, you know, and I left, basically. I packed it in. But if you think about it, since that I used to try and bring my daughter over to Mass in the local church, and here was this hapless young priest, completely unequipped to deal with what his hierarchy were doing in his name, if you like. So you have these people on the ground trying to do a good job. But you're right, there are lots of them, and they believe what they're doing. But once, if you want to progress, if you want to become a bishop and above, I'm afraid you have to become you're a different beast, let's say. And the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, not so much the ordinary priests and people worked on the ground and volunteers, but the upper hierarchy, the upper echelons, work to preserve themselves and what they have. It's a self-serving cabal.
Okay.
And it needs to be called out for
what it is. I know, Jerry, but people find that very hard. But then again, it can be often difficult to I'm trying to think who the last bishop we had on this program who came on willingly.
This is the trouble. You may say tarring them all with one brush. How many revelations do we need? You know.
Okay.
Where does it end?
But you say leave. Do not leave him there. Symbolic.
You said yourself the place is an edifice to rank hypocrisy.
Well, I know. You know, I didn't say that. I was clothing people.
Building of that cathedral, what was? Look at it. Look at what was done.
Well, I tell you why I look at it, because if you go on to the Fall to Ireland, the Discover Ireland website, which is a state-funded, state-funded body, as you know.
Sure.
Where do they tell you to go in Galway?
Yeah.
Have a guess. Galway Cathedral. And this is what Discover Ireland, funded by yourselves, when they encourage people to go to Galway Cathedral, was dedicated in 1965. It was the last major stone cathedral to be built in Europe. This is according to Bord Fáilte. Located in the heart of Galway City, the cathedral boasts an impressive variety of interior art, such as statues, mosaics and stained glass.
Yeah.
Galway Cathedral was constructed in the late 1950s and as such is the youngest of Europe's great stone cathedrals. Dedicated to Our Lady Assumed into Heaven and St. Nicholas, it was designed by J.J. Robinson in a very eclectic style. It includes some Renaissance details mixed with the Romanesque and Gothic conditions, traditions, and the cathedral. This is trying to encourage people to go into it. By the state body. The cathedral boasts an impressive variety of art, including statues and mosaics. Now, I'll go back to the point, the description of it in the Irish Times, which was, four or five years ago, by a man called David Cuddy. Galway Cathedral, this is people are asked to submit their what they regard as the ugliest buildings in Ireland. Galway Cathedral. The squatting Frankenstein's monster of architectural languages casting a miserable shadow over an ocean of tarmac, a Disneyland imitation of the great European ecclesiastical tradition, a monument, says David Cuddy, to the hubris of its soft-handed sponsors. Mm. Now, can I go forward to today? And you say to people, oh, leave it there, it'll be a reminder. But so many good people decent people,
yeah,
go to Galway Cathedral for good reasons. For example,
yeah,
on their website, yeah, I noticed last night of Galway Cathedral, they have an what they call exciting news. And they say, we are delighted to announce the exciting news that the relics of St Bernadette of Lourdes will be visiting Galway Cathedral this September. We invite everyone to join us for this wonderful occasion, for which a schedule of events will be announced soon. Now, as you know, Gerard, and mm-hmm, a lot of people in Ireland have a special devotion to St Bernadette of Lourdes. And are you saying they shouldn't, yeah, go to Galway Cathedral?
No, they can go if they wish.
And they're good people.
Oh, absolutely. Of course they are. What I'm saying is, the good people of Ireland, they can have their beliefs in their God and everything else. You know, mm-hmm, everybody has their own personal God or not, accordingly. That's fine. You know, no issue with that at all. But they really need to take responsibility, okay, yeah, for the organisation. If they want to change the church, keep going and change it from within. It'd be good luck with that, by the way, okay? But if they want to make a difference, they can go there and they can worship and all the rest of it. But they let them be reminded that the building that they're in, you know, this is what goes on. And I would argue, probably to this day, you know, still goes on. You know, it needs to be called out. You know, it's not good enough that somewhere around the corner somewhere, some child has been abused by a cleric, you know, under the guise and protection of the church. You know, it may not be here in Ireland right now. God knows, it probably is, frankly, you know, but it's certainly out there. And this is the problem, that there's this complete, it's great to be devoted to your God and all the rest of it, gives you a purpose, you know, gives you a focus in life. The only problem, if you ask me frankly, with, you know, the unravelling of the Catholic Church that we witnessed, is that nothing takes its place, because you need some sort of societal cohesion that's lost when the church breaks down. That's kind of what you're seeing at the moment, I think, you know.
Okay,
so
Gerard.
That's all the church offers, really, is something for people to adhere to. The trouble is, the people making the rules were completely ignoring them themselves, you know.
Okay, Gerard Kavanagh. Gerard Kelly. Gerard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And this issue that people have really, has really animated people. The burial, the exalted burial place of Bishop Eamon Casey, and the fact that so many people in Ireland, especially stillborn infants, were refused a burial, and we had this phenomenon. And now people believe there's up to 1,400 Killeeny in Ireland, which are so-called unconsecrated burial grounds, because those buried therein, they're unmarked, were not allowed into the Catholic graveyard. Gerard, you've studied this, tell us about your own involvement in it.
Well, Joe, I think to say I studied it might misrepresent my engagement with it, but I certainly would have had a very big interest and looking at it from a very human space. But I came to this yesterday. I was out for a run, and it's absolutely coincidental. But where was I running by? I was running by an infant burial ground, which is the other side of a stream from a well called St. Brendan's Well. And I'm running along, gasping for air, Joe, as one does, trying to keep you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, you know, the silence around this is almost deafening. And even in my own community, and I think the reason for the silence around it is, this is why I contacted your program, is that because there was no language around the event of a child's stillbirth, or the experience of a family, because there was no language around it, no discussion, in many cases it got lost to history.
Okay.
And it's possible that we all know families who maybe had a brother or a sister buried in one of these hurtful places, but the families themselves may not know, because it may never have been discussed around the dinner table in the house where the baby was born. And that's what prompted me to get home yesterday, take out my phone, and just send an email, because I think to remember is to honour.
Yeah, and to forget is dishonour.
So I think that when we remember, the dead don't hear us, but the silent living of those who have buried their dead in these remote places certainly do. And that was my experience in an event that I was organised with in 2014, which I detailed to your researcher, okay. Tara, I think.
And that was an event, a 5K walk.
Yeah. It's just where we all have mad ideas and we say, oh, God, that's mad, let's not do it. Mm. But, you know, something very often the maddest ideas turn out to be the best. I think it was around the time, Joe, of the Tuam. I'm from County Galway, different diocese to aforementioned gentlemen. And I come from County Galway. And I always knew that I could never travel. I can travel 100 metres to a Killeen. Okay. I can count four more. We call them relegines, as in the Irish words for relic, graveyard, relegine, graveyard for little people. I played in a relegine as a child because we gathered hazelnuts from the hazelnut trees that grow there.
Okay.
But I decided in 2014 that there is a moral imperative, I think, really, on all of us to give voice to the voiceless, to do for those who can't do for themselves, or who don't know, or who don't know about their history to do for themselves. And I posted on Facebook, it happened the 21st, which is the longest night, the darkest night of the year, I think, was a Sunday in 2014, and I put a post up on my own personal Facebook page. It was supported by Peter Daly, who writes the Ballygar Banter. I turned up at the designated venue at the stated time, and about 25 people turned up to join me, most of whom I knew, because I went to school with many of them, and some had come from Galway City, as far away as 65 kilometres away.
Okay.
So that the silence, the visual impact of that, and what was unsaid on that day is as memorable and as impactful as what was said.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm probably over-talking on it, Joe, but I love when I get an opportunity to be the voice of those who weren't given the respect, regard or dignity to speak for themselves. And the families, on that particular day, Joe, on the 21st of December 2014, we took a Christmas wreath and we took a lantern and a candle. And it was a non-religious event. I haven't been a paid-up member of the Catholic Church for decades, so I wasn't organising a religious event, but fully embracing and accepting of all faiths and none. So we had a minute silence towards the end, and the silence was broken when a woman I've known all my life said, my brother is buried here, but I don't know where he is. And we looked around and we see a landscape gone to wilderness, headstones and footstones, because each child had a headstone and a footstone. And she didn't know where her brother was buried because her mum didn't accompany her dad with the homemade coffin on the morning in which her brother was interred. So that's repeated countless venues across the country.
Okay, and just that question, should the remains of Bishop Casey be removed from that exalted position in Galway Cathedral?
You know, Joe, I've kind of decided not to mix them.
Okay.
Because I just think that to conflate may not be the word, but to be speaking about the likes of Eamon Casey in the same sentence as the countless burial grounds for infant children. It was people in Eamon Casey's position and higher in the church that decided.
Well, the only people that are buried in the crypt of Galway Cathedral are Princes of the Church.
Yes.
Okay, as they're called. Gerard Kelly, Guramila Malga, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
May is in Waterford. May, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Good, you're listening. Your point, please, May.
Yeah. Is that it's only his remains that's buried there, like his person, his spirit is gone.
Okay. His soul, I presume.
The soul, the person who committed those things. And another thing is that none of us have a right to judge anybody.
Mm-hmm.
God maybe understand how he turned out to be like that. And I'm sure he helped some people when he worked in London.
Yeah.
He worked with Irish people, I think, in London, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd say he definitely was helpful to them, you know.
And we've had a number of them on, but they also said when they saw the programme on Monday, they were so convinced by it, and a number of others, like the church, accepted that he'd done wrong. The church in Galway, the church in Limerick, and indeed the Vatican, The papal nuncio didn't go to his obsequies, didn't go to his funeral. The church accept that he accepted that he did wrong. But you say
the church really can't decide, because it's God will decide that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, the man, obviously, what made him like that, you'd wonder? He must be sick, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, May, thanks indeed, May. May, the last, I'm just trying to remember Waterford Cathedral, which is a lovely cathedral. I remember on one occasion, that's a number of years ago, I rambled into it and I saw that the relics of St. Therese of Lisieux were coming to Ireland. And I happened to mention it on the programme and I was overwhelmed by the positive reaction. Did you know that the relics of St. Bernadette are coming to Ireland?
Yeah, I
didn't know that. And do you know anything about it? Are they travelling around the country or?
I don't know anything about it.
I don't know. Do you remember the crowds that turned out for St. Therese, the relics of St. Therese?
It was incredible. Yeah.
Okay, May. Thanks indeed for that information. John, Eamon is in Dublin. Eamon Kelly, please, your point.
Joe, hi. Just a very simple point. In a campaign like this, if you want to call it a campaign, you've got to find the weakness in the strength because, I mean, the bishops will be very united on something like this and you might as well, to coin a phrase, be banging your head off the cathedral wall.
Right.
But the cathedral is built with planned giving.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned that point about the professional fundraisers. Well, a very simple thing, and it could be over a slow burn over a long period. It doesn't have to be all instant. Planned ungiving. It's enough congregations or enough individuals said, we're just not going to put money into the weekly collection until something is done about Bishop Casey.
Yeah.
As
we heard earlier, it costs at least €1,000 a week for the electricity bill for the cathedral.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they need.
I mean, being cynical about it, the princes of the church have a long history of being more interested in collecting money than collecting souls. You know, now that's the princes of the church, not the local clergy.
And Eamon, you probably aren't, I suspect from your voice. Are you old enough to remember the story about the church asking for jewellery and gold and silver to be donated to the church that it could be melted down? That it could become part of the various ecclesiastical chalices, etc., in the church, the diamonds or whatever, and two, that the gold and silver could be melted down to buy bricks and mortar for the church. But that's not too long ago in Ireland. I wish someone would acquaint me. I think it was Limerick where it happened. But anyway, Eamon, thanks indeed. The unplanned giving is it? John is in Galway. John, you have another suggestion.
Well, thank you. I remember distinctly when the cathedral was being built.
Okay.
And it brought an awful lot. It was an economic boom for Galway City. And a lot of the money that went towards building the Galway Cathedral came from America.
Oh, did it? Tell us, please.
Oh, yeah. And when Pope Paul VI decided to send somebody to represent Rome at the opening of it, he sent the Archbishop, the Cardinal, over in Boston.
Cushing.
Now, there were... As you know from all the programs you've done on immigration, things like that, Boston was full of Galway immigrants at the time. Galway was full of... I was there in just 2 years after in 67 in Boston.
Okay.
The cathedral opened on the 15th of August, 1965.
That's right.
In 1965. Now, we know that the church... was at the height of its power in Ireland during that time.
Okay.
And we had two very strong bishops. We had McQuaid in Dublin and we had Brown in Galway.
Yes.
And whatever they said, that meant that nobody questioned it and things like that. And I think people listening today might think it's something like today. It was totally different. Irish society was totally different. People's attitude towards the church was totally different. In other words, you can say that we're brainwashed, that we were oppressed, you can even, you know. But that was the situation at the time. I remember it distinctly. I remember the day it was, I happened to be in London at the time working as a student, making a few bob, but I remember the church being open. And it was like, It was a state occasion.
It was, and the first candle was lit in the sanctuary by the President of Ireland, who put on her Eamon de Valera.
Of course, but you must remember it was less than 30 years before that when McQuaid wrote the Constitution, basically, for de Valera.
So the money, a lot of the money was fundraised in the States by expats.
Oh, it came from all over the world, Joe. It came America, big time. Now, the second thing is that that programme has done a lot of damage to the church. And we must say, it does not represent the vast majority of good priests, nuns, and even bishops and things like that. I mean, we cannot paint everybody with the same brush.
Of course.
And that is very important that your listeners accept that. Yeah. Now, Casey was a unique individual. I met him at a match in Crow Park. I happened to be sitting not too far from him and went around our way out. He was a charmer. Yeah, I mean, he was an unusual bishop at the time.
Yeah.
You know, just as a person. Now, we're wondering, I think that his remains should be relocated. I think they should be taken out of the cathedral. Give a bad smell to the overall cathedral project. Now, there's one place that wouldn't cause any offence to anybody. There's a lovely cemetery at the back of Maynooth Seminary. I don't know if you were ever in it.
No, I wasn't.
There's a private cemetery there. Oh, there's a good few. A lot of former professors in Maynooth are buried there. The last being, and you would know him, I'd say you probably have interviewed him, was Professor Inda McDonough.
Oh, great man, yeah.
The best man there was never a bishop in Ireland, they all tell me. A wonderful man, a great theologian, you name it, a great human being. Now, I think that would be an ideal place, if there's such a thing as an ideal place, for Bishop Casey to be reinterred. It belonged to the seminary. It's the authorities of the Bishop of Dublin, the Archbishop of Dublin, and some other bishops, the committee that looks after the seminary there. And I think it shouldn't upset anybody.
Okay.
You know, that would be my suggestion. I think if this drags on, it'll do more damage to the church. And whether we like it or not, we mightn't agree with them, and I don't, a lot of things they do and a lot of things they say, but at least it's an important part of our culture, our society, and of course, Ireland as a Catholic country, if it's still a Catholic country, I don't know. Okay. But that'd be my suggestion.
Okay. Well, look at the census, still a very significant number of people put down RC in the census question, nearly 80%.
Yeah.
Okay, good to meet him, I'll get John back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie. Tony McCarthy. Tony, you make the point, because I suspect a lot of people will be interested over the weekend to see can they find these local unconsecrated cemeteries. You say a lot of the Killeeny would have been at crossroads. What are roads meeting together? Why would that be, Tony?
Yes, Joe. They actually, in some cases, you know, there would be a triangular road. There'd be three roads meeting together, but there'd be a bit of soil in the middle of the road that wouldn't be disturbed, and they'd actually bury them there in that bit of soil.
Okay.
And some of them are actually named on the Ordnance Survey 1841 map, the first edition map.
Okay.
And there's one that I know of in my parish, and now it's not. Well, it isn't triangular in the actual map, but it's spelled CROSSNALANNIV, Crossnalanniv. And, you know, it's like that Brian Friel translations.
Well, of course, yeah.
Play, where the languages.
Yeah, the British imposing the English translating the names.
Yeah.
Okay. Are any of those maps, as you say, the 1841 Ordnance Survey and the 1910, are they accessible online?
Totally, Joe. They're all online. They're on osi.ie MapViewer. It's an excellent site. It's like having a history archive on your desk, because you have the first edition maps on it, the 1841, then you have the 1910 ones, and you have the modern maps. But many of the details on things like Killini are not on the current modern-day maps where they are on the earlier maps.
Okay, okay. Another great piece of information. Okay, just another...
There's also some satellite or aerial maps in one as well.
A caller there saying, my mother gave her first engagement ring to help build the Church of St. Francis. But the caller says, I don't think my mother was that keen on it. Now, I don't know whether she was that keen on her first engagement ring or the church. But anyway, it did happen. People gave their jewellery to the church to help build new cathedrals and churches around Ireland. Back tomorrow, 1:45, James Feeney on sound, Jim O'Donoghue Research. Jim O'Donoghue Martin, indeed, and producers Brenda Donoghue and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.